15th of May, 1967. A parade of military might to celebrate 19 years since the founding of the State of Israel. But this public display of power took place under a dark shadow. The previous day, Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser had ordered his forces to take up positions along the borders with Israel.
اللي كنا واثقين منه الموضوع هيحصل هيحصل وانها تقوم معركة بسيطة ضعيفة ضد عدو ضعيف بسرعة جدا هنكون في تل أبيب.
Three weeks later, on the 5th of June, 1967, Israel launched an all-out war against its Arab neighbors. After only 6 days of fighting, it achieved total victory, defeating the armies of Egypt, Jordan, and Syria.
וכך נלחמת ששת הימים, שנחשבת לאיזה מין אירוע צבאי חשוב בהיסטוריה הצבאית, בעצם לא הייתה מלחמה. זה היה מרדף באש חיה מול אויב בורח ולא נלחם.
Known to Israelis as the Six Day War, Israel's territorial gains would change the map of the Middle East. 2 days Israeli occupation of these lands is the main bar to peace in this turbulent region.
This huge territory which the Israeli army had conquered, it completely intoxicated. Everybody was intoxicated. No one could even think straight.
But the story of this war is much longer than the 6 days of fighting. Its roots lay years earlier. 2 decades before the 5th of June, 1967. Tel Aviv, the 14th of May, 1948. The day that Zionist leader David Ben-Gurion declared the establishment of the State of Israel. On the day after the declaration, 5 Arab armies entered Palestine. The Lebanese attacked from the north, the Syrians, Iraqis and Jordanians from the east. But the most serious threat came from the south.
The Egyptian army advanced to the village of Yibna, which is 22 kilometers from Tel Aviv. We were a very thin line of soldiers who were defending what was practically the last line of defense of Tel Aviv.
But the pressure on the Israelis was relieved when a UN brokered truce came into effect.
The Zionist movement purchased arms on the European black markets. The Arab armies, of course, enjoyed mainstream supplies from states. The French supplied the Lebanese and the Syrians, the British supplied the Egyptians, the Jordanians and the Iraqis with a constant stream of arms. In 1948, the United Nations imposed an embargo on arms shipments to the Middle East, and the British and the French abided by this embargo.
When the truce ran out, the Israelis, now better armed, set out to expel the Arab armies from Palestine.
حرب 48 الأعمال العسكرية الكبرى كانت ضد القوات المصرية لأن الجبهة المصرية كانت تشكل لهم خطرا كبيرا. الجبهة المصرية كانت هي الجبهة الأهم بالنسبة للجبهات العربية أو بما يسمى دول الطوق.
By the end of October, as Israeli troops advanced, an Egyptian brigade was encircled at a Palestinian village called Al-Fallujah. Among the officers trapped in this pocket was a young major, Gamal Abdel Nasser. With their armies locked in a stalemate, Egyptian and Israeli delegations met on the island of Rhodes under the sponsorship of the UN. After a month of bargaining, they reached an armistice agreement.
Well, first of all, they had to put an end to the fighting. I believe that Egypt wanted to get out of there as much as Israel wanted. And the negotiation was mostly about evacuating the Fallujah pocket. Egypt had no territorial demands from Israel. So it was relatively easy to reach a ceasefire.
By the summer of 1949, Lebanon, Jordan, and Syria had also signed armistice agreements with Israel. The Jewish state now extended over almost the whole of Palestine. Arab territory was reduced to just a few small enclaves. Eastern Jerusalem and the West Bank were placed under Jordanian control. The Gaza Strip was to be administered by Egypt. In the midst of defeat, Gamal Abdel Nasser conceived a plan that would change the future of Egypt. A movement that would be known as the Free Officers.
كان في كثير من الضباط الأحرار موجودين في 48 وهم في الحرب أدركوا اللعبة اللي اتلعبت بيهم. أدركوا أن دخولهم المعركة كان على غير استعداد وأن هذه مسألة ارتكبت في الدوائر السياسية المصرية. وعشان كده هم قرروا أن يقفوا ضد الاستعمار والقوى المساندة له وفي مقدمتها السراي.
3 years after the end of the war, the Free Officers struck. In July 1952, they launched a coup d'etat. Egypt's King Farouk was dethroned and sent into exile. Lieutenant Colonel Gamal Abdel Nasser, the mastermind behind what was now called the July Revolution, quickly rose to be the country's de facto leader. In Israel, this news aroused deep-rooted fears in Kibbutz Deir Boker, retirement home of Israel's founding Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion.
Ben-Gurion all the time feared that one day a new Kemal Ataturk would rise in the Arab world and will unite the entire Arab world against Israel. And that fear, that apprehension, was enhanced when Nasser took power in 1954.
In February 1955, Ben-Gurion returned to political life, this time as defense minister. Just a week after Ben-Gurion took up the post, 150 Israeli paratroopers, led by Major Ariel Sharon, were sent to attack an Egyptian army base near the city of Gaza. 40 Egyptian soldiers were killed, and many more injured.
When Ben-Gurion came back, he decided immediately to show that Israel is not going to give in. This time, from the Egyptian border, the provocations and the attacks by infiltrators were on the rise.
أتى عبد الناصر بعد أيام، وبالتحديد في أوائل مارس 1955، واجتمع بكبار رجال المدينة ورؤساها، وأقسم بأن هذا الاعتداء لن ينسى، وأن هذا الاعتداء لابد من الرد عليه.
Claiming they were Egyptian territorial waters, Nasser closed the Tiran Strait at the entrance to the Gulf of Aqaba to ships sailing to and from the Israeli port of Eilat. To strengthen his army, Nasser sought more weapons from the West, but this time to no avail. So in a surprise move, he turned east.
Russia's new foreign minister, Mr. Shapilov, lost no time in taking a personal part in Middle East affairs, and he was soon engaged in talks with President Nasser.
Egypt signed this huge arms deal with Czechoslovakia, which was actually with the Soviet Union. Czechoslovakia was supposed to supply Egypt with 200 aircraft, tanks, 1,000 cannon. It was something fabulous.
In November 1955, Ben-Gurion began a second term as Israel's prime minister. At the top of his agenda was how to respond to the growing strength of Egypt, now armed to the teeth. Eight months later, the opportunity came when Nasser announced the nationalization of the Suez Canal. A decision that outraged the British and French, the owners of the International Canal Company.
This is a matter of life and death to us all. Our quarrel is not with Egypt, still less with the Arab world. It is with Colonel Nasser. He has shown that he's not a man who can be trusted to keep an agreement.
Britain and France were convinced that military intervention would be needed to recapture the canal and bring down the upstart Nasser. But a pretext was needed.
فرنسا على لسان بينو وزير الخارجية اقترح انه اسرائيل تدخل معهم كعامل مساعد لاعطائهم الذريعة للتدخل على اساس انهم هيطلبوا من كلا الطرفين المتحاربين التحرك لمسافة 10 أميال على جانبي قناة السويس. إسرائيل بالقطع كانت هتقبل ومصر سترفض، فتعطي الذريعة لإنجلترا وفرنسا إنهم يعلنوا الحرب عليها.
According to this tripartite secret agreement, on the 29th of October 1956, Israeli forces crossed the border into Egypt. Even though the Israelis were still some distance from the canal, Britain and France called for both sides to withdraw. When Nasser rejected the ultimatum, British and French troops began landing in Port Said, at the Mediterranean end of the canal.
United States was not consulted in any way about any phase of these actions, nor were we informed of them in advance. It is our hope and intent that this matter will be brought before the United Nations General Assembly. There, with no veto operating, the opinion of the world can be brought to bear in our quest for a just end to this tormenting problem.
By the end of December, under heavy international pressure, the British and French were forced into a humiliating withdrawal from Port Said. Global attention now shifted to Israel, still occupying the whole of the Sinai and the Gaza Strip.
الرئيس ايزنهاور اتصل ببن غوريون وقال له انسحب من سيناء. فكان الرد يا سيد الرئيس لو اعلنت في الكنيست صباحا ان انا قررت الانسحاب فسوف تسقط الوزاره بعد الظهر. فقال له هذه مشكلتك وعليك حلها.
In March 1957, Ben-Gurion finally ordered the Israeli army to withdraw to the pre-war borders. However, he had secured two major gains. The stationing of UN troops along the borders with Egypt and Gaza put an end to the Palestinian Fida'iyin's raids inside Israeli territories. And Israel was guaranteed free passage of her shipping through the Tiran Strait.
The Sinai campaign gave Israel actually about 10 years of unsigned peace on the Egyptian border between 1957 and 1967. There was a total calm.
But the fragile peace on the borders masked continuing hostility between Cairo and Tel Aviv. In Israel, Ezer Weizmann, the commander of the Air Force, was devising a new strategy. Operation Focus.
האמת היא שהתאמנו למבצע מוקד שנים לא מעטות לפני הביצוע עצמו. הקונספט היה שאנחנו תוקפים את המסלולים ומוצאים אותם משימוש, ולאחר מכן מתארגנים לצליפה ויורים במטוסים הפזורים בשדה.
This network would soon face its first major test. Not though at the hands of Weizmann's Air Force, but through the bizarre actions of an Israeli peace activist.
Ibn Nathan was a commercial pilot, and as a gimmick for the elections of 1965, he bought a little airplane, painted it white and put the name Peace, and said, if I am elected to the Knesset, I will fly to Egypt. He was not elected. A very small number of people voted for him. But by that time, he became very serious of this. So one day, without any announcement, he took off with this plane.
A.B. Nathan landed in Port Said, Egypt, in February 1966.
وصل القناة ازاي ونزل المطار ازاي وفين الدفاع الجوي وفين الرادارات وفين الطيران.
Egyptians treated him very nicely. They did not let him into Egypt, but they let him fill his tank with gasoline and sent him back.
Natan's flight had revealed the weakness of Egypt's air defenses. But Israel still had a major concern. The MiG-21, a high-performance supersonic Soviet fighter. It formed the backbone of the Arab Air Forces. But it too would soon give up its secrets. In August 1966, an Iraqi pilot landed in Israel with his MiG. He had been offered $1 million to defect, but it would turn out to be worth every cent.
Danny Shapira, our chief test pilot of the Air Force, checked the aeroplane and we knew all its disadvantages of the MiG-21, which was the aeroplane of the war in the enemy hands.
It was not long before what the Israelis had learned about the MiG was put to the test in actual combat. In April 1967, the border skirmishes with Syria escalated into a full-scale aerial battle.
We shot down 7 aircraft. It was such a victory in the Israeli Air Force.
In the weeks following this battle, reports, possibly originating with Soviet intelligence, began to come in that Israel was massing its army on the Syrian border. An apparent escalation that spurred Nasser into action. On the 14th of May, 1967, he ordered Egyptian troops into Sinai.
مصر دخلت هذه الحرب وليس في نيتها الهجوم. وإنه مجرد إن 130 ألف عسكري تواجدوا في سيناء هيخلق شيء من الردع لإسرائيل من إنها تقوم بعمل مسلح أو تحاول إنها تغزو أو تهاجم سوريا.
But Nasser also saw an opportunity to try to roll back the gains Israel had secured following the 1956 war. On the 16th of May, Egypt asked the UN to withdraw its peacekeeping troops from Sinai. A week later, Nasser announced the closing of the Tiran Strait to Israeli shipping. News of Nasser's actions brought people out onto the streets all across the Arab world.
حصلت حمية عربية في هذه المرحلة. إسرائيل استغلتها تماما سياسيا واعلاميا انها معرضة الى الفناء. وبالتالي ادت نفسها المبرر لشن الضربة الاستباقية او الضربة الإجهاضية لحماية نفسها.
Israel's new war cabinet under Levi Eshkol took the decision to open hostilities on the 5th of June 1967. The Air Force was given the green light to launch Operation Focus, the aerial attack it had been rehearsing for years. The Israelis had rolled the dice, which would determine the future of their state. Cairo, the morning of Monday, the 5th of June, 1967. A day that will change the history of the Middle East. A plane is waiting to take off towards Sinai. Marshal Abdel Hakim Amer, Deputy Supreme Commander of the Egyptian Armed Forces, is making a morale-boosting visit to troops deployed on the borders with Israel for the last 3 weeks. But this Egyptian show of strength was put to good use by Israeli media. Memories of the Holocaust were invoked to persuade Israelis they were facing a threat to their very existence.
The Egyptians were the Nazis. Gamal Abdel Nasser was never mentioned by name in the Hebrew media at the time. He was called the Egyptian tyrant. That was his name.
In Washington, U.S. President Lyndon B. Johnson issued a stark warning to whichever side should start the war. It was a thinly veiled threat to the Egyptian leadership.
اجتمعوا عدة اجتماعات حضرها الرئيس جمال عبد الناصر. قال لك طيب لو سمحنا لإسرائيل بأنها تقوم بالضربة الأولى. فقائد القوات الجوية اعترض وقال أنا لا أقبل هذا الموضوع. فقالوا له هل تفضل أن احنا نقوم بالضربة الأولى ونحارب أمريكا وإسرائيل، أم نتلقى الضربة الأولى ونحارب إسرائيل فقط؟
In fact, Israel, though apparently the underdog, was far more prepared for war than any of its Arab opponents. Israeli Chief of Staff Yitzhak Rabin toured the front line to meet troops waiting for a green light.
Under this action of Nasser, Israel had to mobilize all its forces, all its reserve forces, and also to think that we should strike first. And the striking first was, in the eyes of Israeli, a reaction to what we thought are aggressive action of the Egyptian side.
The opening attack would be the much-rehearsed Operation Focus. An aerial strike to destroy the Egyptian Air Force on the ground. In the early hours of the 5th of June, 1967, the Israeli Air Force prepared to deliver the first blow.
When we wake up in the morning and came to the briefing room, we wrote on the blackboard the hours, which was 7:45.
200 Israeli jets took to the air. They would arrive over Egyptian airfields at exactly 7:45 a.m. To avoid radar detection, they flew first north, then west over the Mediterranean. Turning south, the planes came in from the north, not from the east, as the Egyptians had anticipated.
طائرتين جايين من بعيد لونهم غامق قوي كده. ويدوبك احنا ركزنا فيهم كانت القنابل بتنزل على الممر. طخ 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 وبقيت الويف بقى.
Now everything is very easy as you trained many, many times before. His aircraft were located very easy on the ground and not far from the runways. It was not a big problem to strike them. Immediately, you saw big torches with smoke over all those airfields.
جريت ولمحت خندق نطيت فيه لقيت لايرز من البشر جوه الخندق. آخرهم واحد كان أستاذي في السرب. فقلت له الموضوع انتهى خلاص. قال لي عيب ما تقولش كده. بلاش الانهزامية دي. قلت له انهزامية إيه؟ هل يعقل ان احنا بس اللي نضرب؟ طبعا كله بيتضرب في وقت واحد دلوقتي.
By midday, the Israelis had successfully attacked 18 airfields. The Egyptians had lost 80% of their air force. More than 300 planes destroyed on the ground.
الطيارات بتاعتنا كانت مرصوصة في المطارات زي مطار زيورخ. مفيش تجهيز هندسي اللي يدوشها من الطائرات، مفيش دفاع جوي قوي، مفيش رادارات قوية تكشف الضربة الجوية اللي خلصت على الدفاع الجوي والطيران في ساعتين.
Ironically, Cairo radio was carrying false reports of the total failure of the enemy's air attack. With news coming in of Egypt's apparent success, Jordan, Syria, and Iraq now launch their own airstrikes.
אני זוכר שביום הראשון, נדמה לי זה היה ראשון או שני, ראינו מטוסי הנטר ירדני, תוקפים את שדה התעופה של סירקין. זה היה שדה לא פעיל. אבל היו שם איזה מטוס נורד אחד, אם אני לא טועה, ומטוסי דמה. ולא הבנו למה.
Ineffective though they were, those attacks gave the Israelis a pretext to widen the scope of the war. Operation Focus was extended to cover airfields in Jordan, Syria, and even a key base in Iraq.
H3 was the only base from which they could reach Israel, and the only base in which we could reach with the last drops of the fuel.
My third flight that day, I attacked Al Maza Air Base, not far from Damascus.
Caught off guard, the Syrians lost half their aircraft. The H3 airfield in Iraq was put out of action. And Jordan's air force was totally destroyed. By sunset on the first day of war, Operation Focus had guaranteed Israel total air superiority in the skies over the Middle East. The Arab armies would now be fighting with no air support. The outcome of the war had been sealed.
I really think that there is no example in the history of world aviation of such a total strike and a total attack. Maybe the only time that you can compare it is Pearl Harbor. The attack of the Japanese on Pearl Harbor, which was also a great surprise attack, which almost decimated the American fleet in the Pacific.
On the ground, though, Egyptian forces were faring much better. They had succeeded in holding up the Israeli armored advance into Sinai. Yet the Egyptian Deputy Supreme Commander, Marshal Amr, was about to take a disastrous decision. Its roots lay in his attempted visit to the front line the day before.
מטוסים ישראלים טסו מעל שדה התעופה ביר גפגפה שבסיני, באותו זמן עצמו טס מטוס מצרי קל עם סגן נשיא מצרים, המרשל עמר, וכל המטה הכללי המצרי. ופתאום, בהפתעה, הם מצאו את עצמם מוקפים במטוסי קרב ישראלים.
Miraculously, the plane was able to return to Cairo. But Marshal Amr had been shocked by witnessing Israel's air supremacy at first hand. The next day, Amr ordered an immediate withdrawal of Egyptian troops from Sinai. An order which led to the total collapse of the Egyptian front.
וכך מלחמת ששת הימים, שנחשבת לאיזה מין אירוע צבאי חשוב בהיסטוריה הצבאית, בעצם לא הייתה מלחמה. זה היה מרדף באש חיה מול אויב בורח ולא נלחם. ואחרי המלחמה, כיוון שההישג היה עצום, החליטו להסתיר את כל הכישלונות, להסתיר את כל הבעיות, ולפרסם סיפור שהניצחון היה בגלל שצהל הוא אחד הצבאות הטובים בהיסטוריה, ומפקדי צהל הם גאונים שכמוהם אולי לא היו בכלל בהיסטוריה.
By the fourth day of the war, Israeli troops reached the eastern bank of the Suez Canal. They had occupied the whole of the Sinai Peninsula and the Gaza Strip.
احنا ظلمنا في هذا الحرب كعسكريين لم نقاتل جيش مصر لم يقاتل نفرز اوامر انسحاب واتبهدل في عمليه الانسحاب وشلنا وتحملنا عن قيد الشعار هذه الهزيمه فكانت جبال حزن رهيبه جدا.
The previous day, the Israelis had also tasted success on their eastern front, ending the short-lived war launched by Jordan's King Hussein.
By 11 o'clock in the morning the first day, virtually after we destroyed the Egyptian air force, but Hussein didn't know it at that time. On the contrary, Nasser called him up and said, "We are winning, we are winning. Do your own share." He didn't do a big offensive. He was unable to do it, but he conquered the hill around the government house. It endangered the southern part of Jerusalem. His forces were only by now a few hundred yards away from Israeli houses of Israeli citizens.
On the afternoon of the first day of the war, the Israelis began their assault against the Jordanians. The battle soon escalated, and 2 days later, the whole of the West Bank and Jerusalem fell to the Israelis.
מפקדים הירדנים ראו שהמצרים נסוגים, ובכל אופן לא מתקיפים ולא פועלים, אז הם החליטו להעביר את שתי חטיבות השריון הירדניות ממזרח לנהר הירדן. וכך לא הייתה שום בעיה גם לכבוש את כל יהודה ושומרון.
With the war all but over on the Egyptian and Jordanian fronts, and ignoring a UN call for a ceasefire, Israel's high command now decided to secure its borders with Syria. On the fifth day of war, Israeli troops began to climb the strategic Golan Heights.
أنا كنت عام 67 ضابط في الجيش اللبناني برتبة ملازم، وكنت على الحدود الجنوبية للبنان مقابل الجولان. يعني حضرت معركة 67 كأنني أحضر على مسرح. أذكر تماماً أن خلافاً لما ذكر يعني أن الجيش السوري قاوم فعلاً، حصلت مقاومة سورية شرسة جداً.
But on the sixth day of the war, Damascus radio made an unexpected announcement. Syria had accepted the UN ceasefire. With no advance warning given to troops fighting on the Golan, the broadcast fatally undermined Syrian army resistance. The man blamed for the army's collapse was the Minister of Defense, a man who would eventually rise to power in Syria, Hafez al-Assad. The Israelis pushed on and occupied the whole of the Golan Heights.
لم يكن خطأ الضباط السوريين، كان خطأ القيادة السياسية التي أعلنت في ذلك الوقت وقف إطلاق النار بالإذاعة بالراديو قبل أن يتبلغه الجنوب.
On At the end of the sixth day of fighting, and only when it had achieved all its goals, Israel accepted the UN ceasefire. The guns fell silent. The Arabs had suffered a humiliating defeat.
وبرغم أي عوامل قد أكون بنيت عليها موقفي في الأزمة فإنني على استعداد لتحمل المسؤولية كلها ولقد اتخذت قرارا أريدكم جميعا أن تساعدوني عليه لقد قررت أن أتنحى تماما ونهائيا عن أي منصب رسمي وأي دور سياسي وأن أعود إلى صفوف الجماهير وأدي واجبي معها كأي مواطن آخر
Under heavy popular pressure, Nasser rescinded his decision to step down from the presidency. And attempts to regain the lost Arab territories began. Israel had tripled its size, capturing the Sinai Peninsula, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, Eastern Jerusalem, and the Golan Heights.
There were songs written, there were victory albums. There was a huge intoxication of victory. This huge, unique, miraculous victory of the Israeli army in that war was the greatest tragedy in the history of Israel.
The Israelis basked in an aura of invincibility. But their victory was just the start of even greater complications, which still plague the Middle East to this day. Israel found itself governing and being responsible for 1 million Palestinians in the newly occupied Gaza Strip, West Bank, and Jerusalem.
I took about 6 months to roam around the newly occupied territories, mostly in the West Bank and Gaza, and I came back and I said, look, there's another people there and they have a national movement. So what do we do? Either we conquer them and create a sort of an apartheid state, or we half the loaf into predominantly Jewish state called Israel, and the West Bank and Gaza should be a basis for future negotiations, a recognition of their rights to have a state of their own, a viable state of their own in the West Bank and Gaza.
What Israel chose was and still remains the first option. In the aftermath of the war, Israel declared what it called the unification of Jerusalem. The entire holy city was placed under Israeli jurisdiction, including Christian and Muslim holy sites.
We are the government and the only government in the area. That is to say that we have obligations and privileges and duties there. Obligation and privilege to maintain law and order and to provide the people with services and with suitable standards of living as a government, like every government towards its citizen.
Furthermore, and in defiance of international law, Israeli settlers began to move into the West Bank, the territory they called Judea and Samaria.
The lands which they wanted to settle in were the core and heartland of the Jewish people in biblical times. This is where Judaism emerged. So it was natural that there would be this messianic urge to settle those areas. Even clear out Arabs from these areas. This didn't happen. But Jewish settlements were placed there, and this has made things much more complicated for peacemaking here.
In addition to the West Bank, settlements were spreading in the Gaza Strip, Sinai, and on the Golan Heights. And as the Israelis tightened their grip on the occupied territories, it became clear they had no intention of returning them.
حالة الصلف الإسرائيلي تجاه أي محاولات لإبرام اتفاق سلام مع مصر بالذات والجوانب العربية المحيطة بيها ترجع أساساً إلى فكرة أنه العقل الإسرائيلي يتعامل دائماً مع كل المحيطين به وفقاً لمناطق القوة والضعف. فإذا كنت لا تمتلك أوراق ضغط ولا تمتلك مواطن قوة تمارسها ضده هو لن يستجيب ليك ولن يعطيك أرض ولن يبرم معك اتفاق سلام.
In October 1973, after just 6 years, the Arabs, aiming to restore their territories and their dignity, would launch another war. Israel was about to receive a sharp reminder of the vulnerability it thought it had conquered forever in the War of June 1967.